world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media. Who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
And welcome to the Revere Radio Network. You're listening to Nowhere to Run with Chris White. It's a pleasure to be here with you on the Revere Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to be on the network and a part of the system here with 20 other DJs doing virtually the same thing, trying to get information out to everybody and offering an alternative to the alternative. And that's what we do here at the Revere Radio Network. And I'm damn proud to be a part of it. We've got a lot going on. There's always a lot going on nowadays. This is the most important time in the history of the world. It's so important to remember that that there might not be a whole hell of a lot of happy days left. The clock's ticking. We're on the clock, so to speak, and we've got to do the right thing. We've got to do it quick. And it's important to realize that they're more afraid of us than we are of them. It's can't be stressed enough. That fact alone will empower you when you get afraid of what they can do to you, or you start getting a little more paranoid because you're doing a little bit more and getting a little more outspoken and getting a little more active. Then it always counters with this extra paranoia. But you will always be emboldened when you realize that they are deathly afraid of you, and they're deathly afraid of people not being afraid of them. That is the worst thing that can happen, is to stop being afraid of them. Because I'll tell you what, you know, if history repeats itself, this will not be the first time in the world that there have been mass killings of dissenters. And we, you know, if you're reading the writing on the wall here, we're about to go through, you know, something Nazi Germany never dreamed of right here in America and in the whole world. There is about to be a major power play with this this control and this power that they've already attained. And when they start losing control, they will start exercising their power. And when they do, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to die. And it's going to be people that are going to be outspoken. So I have to say, if the people out there can stop being afraid of death, then the potential to change the world is unlimited. But they've got us so fearful of everything. I mean, they get us fearful of the debt that we're in. And then, you know, they built this whole system to where everything's about your career. So they get you fearful of that, and you go get these loans, you know, for school, and you got these school debt loans and credit card loans. You know, and that hangs over you like a dark cloud until you run in the rat race and get some career because everybody told you that's what your identity is what you do. So you got to work and find this career. So you don't want to lose your job. So you walk on eggshells. It's just you're so afraid of losing your job because you've got all these debts and bills to pay. And then kids come along, and my God, you can't lose your job then because you've got this. Not to mention your white picket fence prison, that mortgage debt that you're in, that you can't possibly lose your job. I mean, you don't have time to go find another job. I mean, you got all this debt and you can't do nothing. I mean, you're just stuck. You're stuck. You never can do anything. I mean, your biggest freedom is what channel that you can turn the TV to when you get home. Oh, and for most people, that's their proof that they're living in a free country, because they can flip from MTV to FX right back to CNN and then to Fox News. And, you know, I mean, just because you have the freedom to change the channel and you're not, you don't have a physical restraint on you making you go to work and have half your money taken and paying the debts run up by a government that may very well be illegal. I mean, and you know, and it's all starting to fall apart for them right now. I mean, there's a lot of things happening with this run up to Iran, and you know, they are obviously having the 10,000 extra troops or whatever they're having. They need to keep the troops over there until they attack Iran, because they need as many, you know, but they can't go out and say, well, we've been planning on attacking Iran, so we need to go ahead and keep the troops over here. They're just trying to play ball until they can make everything else fit, you know. And then when they do that, and China, who is holding vast amounts of our dollars, who doesn't like them anymore, nobody really does, because they've lost their value by half in the last 5 years and are, you know, going out of style, so to speak, all by design, of course. So China, who has said they're going to drop our dollar if we attack Iran, because that means that we have to borrow untold billions and trillions of dollars to fight a war with Iran, which would be much more difficult because they'll actually fight back. So what will we do? We'll have to borrow so much money from the Federal Reserve again, who will, you know, then further own us. They'll probably have to sell off assets like all of our land. And actually, China might call the debts on the land that they already own. It's a long story. I don't really understand all that much, but I know we're fucked as far as that goes. But I know that at least they'll be doing that to, so we can have this debt consolidation plan that comes in and says, look, guys, we're going to go to the North American Union. And now that our dollar is very much like the Mexican peso, we're going to adopt this Amero, and all our debt's going to be absolved. And the Federal Reserve would be cool with that, because it'd be like, well, fuck it. You know, I mean, you know, they've already owned everything. At this point, they can take a loss of, you know, some of that debt. Although I think our national debt now is only a percentage owned to the Federal Reserve. It's mostly to a lot of different things in China and whatever. I don't really understand the economic system as much as I talk about it. But I do know, as I said, that we are fucked, and they are going to use the devalued dollar in order to soften the blow of the North American Union, which is the Security and Prosperity Partnership, SPP.gov. And if you are listening to the show and haven't listened to a lot of the other alternative radio, that is the North American Union, as it's commonly referred to, which is our country, America, Canada, and Mexico, all being consolidated into one country, which is the reason why there has never been any secure borders, and the reason why they are encouraging through various different ways Mexican immigrants to come over here and take our jobs, because it lowers the middle class. The middle class is, you know, most of you know, and have many people have written books on, is under attack, and that is because the middle class is the last hope for the world. Because we are the last group of people, I'm putting myself in the middle class, although I'm broke as a joke, the middle class is the last group of people that can actually change the course of this takeover, because we have the freedom of the Constitution and the money. Being such a strong country, the middle class can actually affect the direction of the country. And the reason that they don't generally say that the reason I'm not saying that the upper class is the last hope for the world is because the upper class is, because of the vast shifting of wealth from the middle class to the upper class in the Reagan administration and the Bush administration, they're all company men up there with all the money. The middle class is the last real people. You know, the Federal Reserve has gone through every other country and systematically gave them huge loans that they knew they could never pay off, and then called the debt, and when they couldn't pay off their loans, they took their assets of that country and thereby owned that country and its major assets, whatever it would be, their oil, their diamonds, their gold, their crops, their opium, their whatever. You know, the Federal Reserve and other world banks and the big bank, European bankers and all that stuff, have gone through the entire world and systematically bought, quote-unquote, everything else. It's a lending practice that was highly illegal. If somebody would lend somebody a huge amount of money that they knew they could never pay back, I forget the word for it, but it's not cool. And, you know, that's what they've done all over the world. Now they have put their sights on America and the middle class, and they're doing the same scam here. This is the last hope. That Constitution is that last wall that they have to break down, and the middle class is the last group of people that can defend that document. And the Constitution, that one document that was drafted a long time ago, is the whole world rests on that document. You know, they can pass all these laws, and they can go against the Constitution, and they can declare wars without asking Congress, and sign executive orders that bypass the legislative process. And none of that's legal. You always can have the potential to say, look, you may have say that it's legal, but it's not. As long as that Constitution is still in that glass case, and as long as you and we haven't, and the legislative body and all the Congress has not officially declared that document null and void, then no, it's all illegal, and we are still governed by it. You know, unless an amendment that says is put onto that, and everybody signs it and says okay, then you can always have a valid recourse and a legal recourse for saying no, fuck no, this is all illegal. It's an illegal war. But you know, if it's not an illegal war, if we're in a dictatorship, I mean, then it's perfectly legal. It's perfectly legal for the president or an emperor to bring us into any situation that he wants to. It's perfectly legal for him to do anything that he wants to do at all to your body or to whatever, because it's a dictatorship. He's the emperor. He can do any damn thing he wants to if there's no governing document like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But I'll try to get back to the point. I'm going to take a break here in a little bit, and I know I have been ranting uncontrollably without really getting to a point. I'm trying to do that right now, and that is that we should all be very emboldened with knowing that on one hand we have this amazing awakening that is not being televised, and the numbers, out of sheer innate understanding, people are starting to realize things that they never realized in the whole of human history. These blinders are being taken off us, and all of a sudden people are starting to see right through the masks of not just these people, but what's beyond these people. And on the other hand, you have the other side realizing this and realizing that they're going to have to push forward, and they always knew it. They always knew, and I've heard quotes saying that, you know, when they have everything in place, it doesn't matter what people know, because at that point, there's nothing they can do. You know, I can imagine that once they get everybody chipped, I mean, they could take off the masks and be like, bow down, you know. I mean, there's no more games that have to be played at that point, you know, if they have the grid firmly in place. But anyway, so they're running side by side with equally powerful force of people getting awake to this. So it's a very close game here, then a very dangerous game that we're playing, because there will be a lot of people dying here in the future, and it will be people that will be standing up for what they believe in, and outspoken people. There's also another aspect to this that gets overlooked, and that is the coming deception that's going to throw a big monkey wrench in this problem. And there's going to be a lot of people that are on our side right now that are going to go over to the new side. There is, it's the same way that evil has always worked. They've taken, hijacked truth, and they have used it to further a bigger lie. It's basically, you know, this truth is going to come out, and there is still a lot of deceiving that has to go down, so they have to incorporate the truth that is inevitably going to come out, and work that into the new dogma that is such an important part of this new world government that they are putting together. There is, let me be very clear on this. The one world government that everybody talks about being set up is only a vehicle to implement the one world religion. And that one world religion is only a vehicle to implement a forced worship on one man who the devil himself will embody, thereby receiving the literal worship of the entire world, albeit forced. There's a lot of things in motion right now that very clearly show how this is about to work, and it's very important for people to know this beforehand. So that's about what I'm going to try to get into on the second half, so I'm going to take a break here, and we'll get right back into it.
To the Revere Radio Network. Remember, Revere Radio Network is listener-sponsored radio. Now, it's not all about the Benjamins, but believe me, that shit helps.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Hello.
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 Hello, hello,
hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air. All hollering all the time.
All right, everybody, we are back. You are listening to Nowhere to Run on the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. Got a lot to get into, so we'll do that right about now. One of the main things that I want to get across right here at the outset is that these theories that I'm putting forth on this extremely important issue are works in progress, I think, right now. I still am very thirsty for this information. I think it's the most important issue in all of this, and I've already noticed my theories have changed from earlier shows, and they'll probably change from later shows, but I'm just trying to tell you that I'm trying to put together a picture of what I'm thinking, and it's really hard to do for me. I need to find a better way to do this, but it's changing, but I just feel it's important to continually verbalize my changing ideas about how this is going to be implemented, because you never know when the last show might be. And it will probably come across as just a straight rant and ramble, but that's the way, only way I know how to do it. As most of you know, I believe in a Christian version of events for the most part, although I am an extremely liberal Christian in that I believe that this end times actually will have to do with beings that we are currently not aware of, and that is, you can call them aliens. I don't know. This is the kind of thing I'm trying to piece together. I am right now convinced that there are... or at least there will be used in this great deception either a race itself shown and starting to intermingle with us, or a showing of these craft as proof of their existence, or a showing of ancient history's many anomalies that will point to aliens having visited us early on, and in fact the seeding of us will accompany a new neo-Darwinism, because Darwinism itself is not workable in any mathematical sense. We now know, and that's the Journal of Science, and that's modern, you know, regardless of how much you want to cling to this 100-year-old dogma of Darwinism, it doesn't work now that the fossil record is not complete, but at least a hell of a lot more complete than it was 100 years ago. Let me first get out of the way the big lie that will be tried to be used the minute that this happens, and just keep in mind how much this rolling out of aliens advances the devil's agenda. But you can already hear this big lie being told. I want to say this right off the bat: aliens and the existence of aliens, even in the most Art Bell kind of way, is totally okay with the Bible. There will be a major PR push that aliens equal not just all religions being wrong, but more specifically Christianity being wrong. For some reason, you can already see this build up happening, that aliens equal Christians wrong and stupid and mean, and you know, like somehow the existence of aliens null and voids everything else. Now, if you can find anywhere in the Bible where it precludes the existence of something else that God that couldn't have had, you know, anything else going on. He never said in the beginning, and by the way, this is the only thing that I ever created, and I never created anything besides this. It certainly never alludes to that. But I tend to think that this is going to be a much more technical issue. Deception is coming, a deception so great that the very elect would be deceived, it says, if it were possible. And you know it, if you believe in the Bible, you know it's a big deception, because it creates a one-world religion. And that means that all these religions overnight are going to change their tune. And in order for that to happen, you have to have a number of things hit the fan, and you know, it's not going to be normal shit that's going to make a religion change its course. And as I said, it could be one of those things, the actual aliens on the White House lawn. It could be some showing an anomaly in ancient history, thereby showing that we were seeded by aliens or the craft or great signs and wonders in the heavens. But it will have to do with something like that, a new origins. And if it's any indication, the major players on this are really screaming the genetically seeded Zachariah Sitchin model right now, with Michael Tesserian and Zachariah Sitchin himself. I saw on SNBC the other day, or a guitar player did, and you know, spitting out the same thing. They're getting ready to say this, and they've laid a nice foundation of the genetic modification. Now, the reason that the genetic modification, in my opinion, will work as a deception point, and in conjunction with another event, probably producing some bodies, or more accurately, probably producing some live intermingling issues, because I think that the Antichrist, at some point, in some way, will claim descendants from this group. But if you can understand what Zachariah Sitchin is doing now, even David Icke, through his interviews with Arizona Wilder said, now Zachariah Sitchin was, you know, coming to these rituals and people wouldn't talk to him because he was the main misinformer, and what he was putting out, he was very ruthless if people would start putting out information that he didn't want put out. According to Arizona Wilder. I guess that means I'm on Sitchin's hit list. So here we have this woman calling him out and actually that was when David Icke says, you know, interestingly enough, he warned me against talking about the reptilians too. Well, this man is, and George Tesserian, who is his lackey, his little bulldog, Michael Tesserian, not George, is doing the same thing. Putting out this idea of genetically engineered race as a seeding race. Like, we are the products, as are some of these other beings. We are the products of genetically engineering by basically an ancient group of scientists who came down here to mine gold and genetically engineered the monkeys to be a little bit better. But then they got that genetically engineered wrong because they were too smart, so they dumbed them down, and that didn't work either, and so they had to genetically engineer another race, and that didn't work so good, so they had to... And then they ended up interbreeding with them, so that produced another race, i.e. the Nephilim story. So they kept fucking with our DNA, and then that's basically how we got here. So, in a sense, nobody offers in this creation story any of the main questions that we still struggle with today, like, you know, cosmology and the origins of the universe itself, and who created those guys, and all this stuff. But
that's nitpicking, isn't it?
But don't you worry one little bit, because when these new aliens, our new gods, will come down here and tell us all that we're really the gods, they'll tell us all these main Luciferian themes of how we are really the gods, and you know, this whole idea of having this father mentality is just ridiculous, and we don't need to answer to anybody, and all this other things. But they'll tell us the origins of the universe. They'll give us all kinds of answers. In fact, they can tell us any damn thing that they want to, and just on the mere merits of them being an alien, we'll just believe the hell out of them. Now, why is this genetically engineering thing working? Why are they using this? Now, as I said before, the general rule of cultism is always to take a truth, something that is undeniably true, and then throw a whole bunch of bullshit on top of it, and then say, well, since A is true, B and C and D must also be true. So to look at this from this angle of why is this Sitchinism being, why is this particular, now keep in mind, this is extremely important part of this story. If you are a follower of Zachariah Sitchin, you must know what it is that you're following. Go to an extremely well-documented, all done in the most strict scientific method. Go to SitchinIsWrong.com. This guy really lays it on the line. This guy is exactly what Zachariah Sitchin claims to be, an expert in how Zachariah Sitchin never misses an opportunity to tell you that there's only really 200 people in the entire world that can that can read what he can. I mean, he always touts himself on the back of every cover of every book as the sole understander of the Sumerian tablets, and really the only one that can accurately interpret the Sumerian tablets. And that's why it's so incredibly crucial to hear another side of this story, where he is only one of 200 that get this information out of these tablets, where you know, in his academic credentials are not even available. The reason that I think that there is truth involved, and the reason I compared it to the cultism with taking a truth and throwing bullshit on top of it, and the reason that the main theme of Sitchin in this new age, and also obviously of Tessarian, will be this genetically engineering aspect. Why is the genetically engineering aspect being touted? What's important about that? Well, science is now, although they haven't exactly released this on the news yet, but science has pretty much wholeheartedly discarded the idea of Darwinism as random mutations at the genetic, at the molecular level, sifted by natural selection. It's mathematically impossible. It's been in the Journal of Science, you know. Let me say that they say it's so mathematically improbable, it's functionally impossible. It's hard to speak in absolutes when referring to scientific method. Excuse me. Darwin basically asked everybody to go on a wild goose chase with the fossils that hadn't been found at that point. Now we have 100 years of fossils filling museums that show that all life appeared in the Cambrian era. All known phylum appeared very un-Darwin-like in the Cambrian era, and there's just no way for it to happen. They've tried to, and they have come up with different theories, such as the latent library theory, which suggests that the genome and the DNA was within itself. This is getting way off the subject, but DNA was mutating without expressing it until the Cambrian era, and then all these mutations that happened, because single-celled organisms stayed pretty much unchanged in water for 3 billion years, and then all of a sudden the Cambrian era, those, you know, went from single-celled protozoa and different globs, and then boom, they turned into every single phyla we know in the 530 million years ago. So it was very un-Darwin-like in its explosion of life, you know. So the reason that we have to have, or why they have to have, the genetic engineering story and the gods seeding us at a very early level from the monkeys is because it is impossible, and it will become very obvious because they'll tout it in their story. They'll use the truth as their own when they show that. I mean, there must be an intervention from a intelligent source to explain the genetic development of human beings. Now as I and most Christians believe that intelligent source was God and his creating of us, you know, that this gives continues the ability to have this evolution anti-God alternative for people, and that is offering them the chance to believe that there was intelligent intervention, except for that intelligent intervention was this benign alien source that very well might be ourselves in the future, thereby continuing with this whole "we are the gods, we are the ones that really deserve all the praise, there is no father figure, it's just us, why would we want to be subservient to anybody?" And it also gives us that opportunity to explain the fact that science, as it gets stronger and better, will show that there has to be a genetic infiltration and a genetic manipulation in order to explain our DNA. And that's how they're going to do it, is through this Sitchinism and Tessarianism. And they're going to use the fact that these Nephilim and how they used to rule the Earth as gods and giants of old, they're going to use that idea as proof that the aliens were here. You know, you can find in archaeology and in history, there can be an unveiling of what really happened in history, and they can give you a version of events showing these Nephilim and whatnot in their own light. They can say, well, these Nephilim were actually aliens or whatever. This is what I'm saying, that they're going to use this idea and prove, like any good cult does, prove that, hey, look at this, there were gods here back then, and they were aliens, and they were aliens, and they came here, and they genetically seeded us, the hence all this other stuff, and whatever, whatever. Now, they, and this is what I think that actually is going to change some religions up, they're going to produce some aliens, and I think that the Antichrist is going to claim lineage from this alien race, all of which will be tied into the Nephilim. Nephilim, you know, the sons of God who actually had sex with the women, they got in trouble and got confined to the abyss. However, their children, the Nephilim, did not. And their spirits, who were unredeemable, which was, I forget how it was explained, but that unredeemable meant that they were in some way confined to the earth, so that their spirits, after the bodies of the Nephilim, the giants themselves, passed away, could actually be the demons of old, the demons that Jesus was casting out, and, you know, this, that were seeking embodiment desperately enough to plead to be allowed to go into pigs as opposed to back to wherever they went, which was apparently the absence of bodyhood. Those same demons of old are the same demons that are here now. They just got a little bit more sophisticated in their time here on Earth and learned a little bit more about us and have been less flamboyant when they possess people, but still without bodies of their own. And one theory is that these Nephilim spirits who are now here, these demons, you know, through some of these reports of these different types of aliens who have these, who are abducting people and doing all these experiments on their reproductive systems, may in fact be building a golem of old, this soulless cavity, this body that they can embody for their own bodies without having to possess people. And maybe that's what is going to be presented to us in the end times. I know a lot of Christians, you know, when they try to incorporate these two things, generally say, well, the aliens are obviously demons. Well, I don't think it's that simple. I mean, they very well could be these P-45, P-52s, 42,000, 52,000 years in the future. They could be a number of things, and this is one of those options that they could be too. So anyway, there's a number of reasons and ways that the aliens could manifest, this whole idea of future aliens can manifest in the future, and my Christian theology is okay with virtually every way that they would manifest. Again, the Bible is very okay with there being other beings out there other than humans. The Bible is also okay with these P-45s, P-52s. I mean, because, yeah, it says that after the apocalypse, it's not the end of the world. The world gets regenerated, in a sense, the way I understand it. And then there's a thousand-year reign of Jesus himself. And then there is a final battle with evil. And then after that final battle with evil, the earth doesn't disintegrate. It apparently continues for an untold amount of time. And so there very well could be us in the future, 52,000 years ago, figuring out time travel and coming back and doing these different things and visiting with ourselves. There very well could be that. There very well could be a number of different explanations. But the main thing is, whatever happens, you must not let the lie of aliens or something weird happening like this be proof to you that Christianity doesn't exist. Here is the main thing that you can find out about these people, like Michael Tesserian or Zachary Sitchin, but especially this Tesserian guy, man. He's really been pissing me off lately because he doesn't really ever stay on a subject long enough. He just takes these little cheap shots at stuff, and you could, the venom against Christianity singled out. I mean, these people like Tesserian never. I mean, no other religion is even bad. I mean, it's only Christianity. I mean, he encourages everybody to look into every other religion. I mean, you gotta spend some time in Eastern religions and study your occult Bibles and, you know, be the Buddhist, and Buddha was awesome and all this other stuff. But Christianity, God, that's the most ridiculous thing in the whole world. Although he spends half of his, lectures quoting the Bible. And then doing the very same things that just about everybody does that wants to take some shots at Christianity, which they take shots at the Catholic Church, and then having that be their proof that Christianity is false, because they can find all these ancient, you know, ritualistic satanistic, you know, stuff in the rituals of the Catholic Church, where I'm, you know, pretty sure that
the Catholic Church was born out of Satan's ass, for lack of a better expression.
And, of course, not all Catholics are bad, and, in fact, you know, there's very good Catholics that there's truth there, but there certainly is a lot of evil there, too, and its inception and all these rituals and everything else that the Catholic Church did.
So they always
show the symbolism about that and then prove to their cult that, or whatever, not cult, but prove to whoever that, look, Christianity is based on this and that because the Catholic Church does this and that. Well, you know. And now we look at the 2012 thing. If you really look into 2012, you want to try to find the conspiracy in it, you will find that there isn't a whole hell of a lot to go on. At least there's not a lot to go on everything that you keep hearing about 2012, I think.
Beyond the fact that the Mayans were very astrologically aware of different cycles, there isn't a lot to go on as far as when people try to incorporate what 2012 means in a spiritual awakening level and all this other dogma that they throw on this astrological chart, it doesn't hold water if you really want to study it.
What I perceive this to be, the 2012, is a twofold opportunity for the devil. One is, it's the equivalent of what the pharaohs used to do with the eclipses of the sun. They used to, because they knew that the eclipses were coming, they could tell the people that, you know, the God's about to swallow up the sun, and it's probably going to take me doing some incantations or whatever to get him to unswallow the sun, and then you guys will know that I am, you know, really the Pharaoh, your God, or whatever. It's the same situation going. I mean, this is a cycle, I believe, that we're going to go through, and I don't think that anybody claiming to know exactly what's going on. There's lots of evidence that polls shifted and all these things that happen, and it could be like, you know, you have a day and a week and a month and a year and a, you know, whatever. I mean, there's lots of different cycles. The Earth is going around the galaxy. I mean, going around the sun in the same way the sun is going around the galaxy. There are cycles. So something's going to happen, and it, you know, shifting into the age of Aquarius and all this stuff.
And the other evil agenda that 2012 serves is help to explain the rapture.
Again, Satan knows the Word of God very, very well. He knows that this rapture is coming.
He doesn't know when, but he knows a general time frame because, as you know, no man should know the day or the hour, but we're commanded with the fig tree parable to know the general time. It's a command. And so in the same way 2012 is given with all these loose qualifications of it could be, you know, somewhere a little before, a little after, you know, but generally speaking around then.
And when it does, he's going to have a very good excuse. When I first started studying prophecy, I always wondered, you know, how can you have this rapture and then have everybody all this still not believe? You know, how can you even continue when it will obviously be the thing that makes everybody wake up and be like, oh my God, so they were right about that, and they're gone, and this sucks. Well, I'm sure that there is going to be some people that do that, but here is, but that's what this 2012 thing is building everybody up, that it's going to be some psychic revolution, and now all the people that weren't ready for the new age and the new change, they're gone. It's some sort of psychic purge. And now we're all here, and we're all the ones that really matter, and let's really go into this new world religion, and I'm your new leader, and we're all going to worship me, and that's how the devil
is going to cover his ass about the rapture. He has to set up the situation to be a good excuse for when it all happens.
Forces, after he chips everybody, forces everybody to, and I say chips, I'm assuming that the Mark of the Beast will be a chip that is going to do some other things besides just mark you. I think it's going to affect people in a lot of different ways, but it's beyond the point right now. Okay, I've been rambling for a while now. I'm going to take a break. I just want to say that these are just ideas right now, and all I can do is pray that I'm not giving you any false information that can harm you. I just want to help you help me think about what this, what could be going on. It's very important, and I just don't, you know, I'm still getting bits and pieces of information and forming an idea about it, and I don't claim that this to be the truth yet, you know, or anything like that, but it's definitely been a work in progress for a long time with me, and, you know, different pieces get added and thrown away, and I'm just rambling, man, rambling and ranting. I'm so sorry. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back.
Radio Network, Tampa.
Last week, Japanese scientists placed explosive detonators at the bottom of Lake Loch Ness to blow Nessie out of the water. Sir Court Godfrey of the Nessie Alliance summon the help of Scotland's local wizards to cast a protective spell over the lake and its local residents and all those who seek for the peaceful existence of our underwater ally.
Yeah.
You're not just telling us what we want to hear.
No, sir, no way.
Because we just want to hear the truth.
Well, then I guess I am telling you what you want to hear.
Boy, didn't we just tell you not to do that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
All right, everybody, we are back. On the balance of the time, I think I got about 9 more minutes here. I'm going to play some Chuck Missler audio clips, and he will talk a little bit about what I've been talking about as far as all this craziness, and he does a lot better job of referencing things and whatnot. So I got 9 minutes. I'll go ahead and sign out and say thank you to everybody for listening to the show. I'll see you next week, and enjoy this clip, Chuck Missler.
Makes an allusion here that catches our attention. In verse 6, he says, "And the angels, which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting change under darkness unto the judgment of the great day." Now, this left their own habitation, the word in the Greek there is ideon, which means their own private, personal, unique possession is what they left. They left it, and the word apolipo is in the aorist tense, which means they left it once and for all. There was no going back. We're going to find, if you go to the next verse, it says, Jude continues, "Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh." The word strange there is heteros. There's two. If you want something, you want another something, in the Greek there's two words, allos and heteros. If I have a pencil and I would like you to get me a pencil exactly like this when I use the word allos. If I want a pen rather than a pencil or something, I want something different than a pencil. I use it in English, I say another, but in the Greek I would say heteros. Heteros means something of a totally different kind. And that's what's used here. They're going after strange flesh. Now also what many people miss is that Jude in his structure here is tying together the sin of the angels with the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. Both of them were of sexual aberrations. But he's talking about these angels, which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. What's happened to them? He hath reserved an everlasting chains unto darkness unto the judgment of that great day. These angels that did all this are presently, as we speak, tucked away for a future judgment. They are sealed off in a strange place. Not in the usual concept of Hades. We'll come back to that. Peter gives us a little glimpse here. We'll come to that in a minute. But these, the New Testament, thus, Jude is alluding here to the same thing that we've been talking about. Now, if we go to 2 Peter chapter 2, turn to the left a few books and get to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter also is taking up the same kind of an argument and on the same sort of subject that Jude does about these false teachers. And he's warning of the false teachers. But again, he's using the same kind of expression that Jude did. He's making an allusion, if these guys got theirs, what about you kind of thing. In chapter 2, verse 4, Peter says, "For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to Tartarus," it's translated hell in your English Bible. The word Tartarus in the Greek is the only place it occurs in the New Testament. I'll come back to the word. "And delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved in judgment, and spared not the old world that saved Noah," and he goes on. So Peter tells us when this took place. You see, it took place at the time of the flood of Noah. So these fallen angels, fornicating with women and having these bizarre offspring, occurred when? Before the flood. So it all ties together. Genesis 6 ties together with 2 Peter 2, verse 4, and Jude, verses 6 and 7. Are we together so far? Okay. Now, the word Tartarus, by the way, only appears here in 2 Peter 2, 4 in the New Testament, but it is used in Greek classical literature, in Homer's Odyssey, I believe it is. It speaks of a place that is so... It is as far below Hades as Hades is below the earth. So the term Tartarus in the Greek language is a vocabulary confined to the place that these fallen angels are sequestered until the final judgment. Spooky stuff. I'd like us to be, as we go forward here, to make a distinction, though. Many people who write books on this subject confuse the angels that sinned with their offspring. The angels that sin are angels. Okay? Now, let's start with that. The first problem we have is many of you may recall that Jesus makes a remark that many people misunderstand. In Matthew chapter 22, verse 30, and Mark 12, 25, Jesus indicates that angels in heaven don't marry. And people quote that verse to prove, well, this has to be all wrong because angels can't have sex. That said, they can't, they don't. And we're talking about the angels in heaven, not the fallen angels. And the comments that Jesus made are, first of all, subsequent to this. I think the angels may have learned their lesson. But also, it doesn't limit their capabilities to commit felonies of the fallen ones. It's kind of interesting to notice, by the way, let's poke into 2 Peter chapter 3. In verse 3 following, a well-quoted verse, but I'd like to highlight some things in here. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they are willingly ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, by which the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. But the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and the perdition of ungodly men. What many people miss in this passage is not just pointing out that at the end times, scoffers will disparage the idea of the second coming of Christ. We often quote verse 3 in that context. It's certainly true. It's interesting when you run into people that, and many in churches, that sort of disdain your interest in the second coming. Remember, that was one of the signs of the times, is that this verse, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after the lust. But notice what they're saying, that where is the promise of his coming? For all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation, which is not true, but that's what they believe. There are some gigantic discontinuities in the history of planet Earth. And the biggest one occurred in Genesis 3. What we know about the creation, we know about it post-curse. Everything we know about the universe is after the fall of Adam. I usually challenge people, prove to me that Adam lived in only three dimensions. I'm not trying to make a point other than to realize that we know very little about what it was like prior to sin, prior when he walked with God, etc. Genesis 3 was a gigantic discontinuity. Some scientists believe that's when the speed of light first starts slowing down. That's when entropy was introduced, according to Romans 8. All kinds of issues there. The other big discontinuity occurred in Genesis 6. The flood of Noah was not just a lot of water. Scientists have studied pterodactyls and believe they could not fly unless the atmospheric pressure was twice what it is today. We know that the ecology of the Earth is quite different. We find the tropical plants enshrined in ice in Siberia. There's all kinds of evidence the Earth had a totally different climate, totally different system way, way back. So a lot changed at the flood, far more than we probably have any real insight into. And so something very drastic is going on. Now, I'd like to touch on a couple of other things here. Let's talk about angels. Let's not confuse ourselves about angels. We're talking here about some misbehaving angels, but let's understand what angels are. All through the Scripture, we find occasions where angels are mistaken for men. Mistaken for men. They ate with Abraham and Sarah in Genesis 18. They fought with the homosexuals in Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 19. One angel after dinner in 2 Kings chapter 19 wipes out 185,000 Assyrian armies. You don't mess around with angels. They're rough dudes. Hebrews 13 tells us that many of us may have entertained angels unawares. What does that tell us? It tells us that they're capable of being mistaken, at least, for men. They look, feel, act tangibly when they want to. I'm not suggesting they're limited to that, but they certainly have that capability. So this idea that angels don't marry is an attribution that Jesus makes of angels in heaven that are properly behaved. Okay? Now, the union in Genesis 6 was not natural, and they had very bizarre offspring, and the reason for that offspring was a plot of Satan that we will deal with in our subsequent session. This is part one of a two-part session, and we'll get into the I want to make a point, though. Don't confuse the B'nai Elohim, but